You never have to worry about trying to get through a swap because returns are so easy on Amazon.com. Get the best deals on everything you need and help support Rob as a podcast whenever you start your Amazon shopping with our link, robisawebsite.com/Amazon, or for our friends in Canada, it's robisawebsite.com/AmazonCA.
The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor know-it-alls.
Yes, that's right. The Survivor Know-It-Alls are back. Morning edition. Stephen Fishback talking about the swap.
Woo!
Yes.
Woo! Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah.
Morning.
For the first time this season, we'll be talking swap, and we're not talking about Figgy and Taylor's spit.
Swapping
Hey-o.
Spit.
Hey-o.
You know what? This was a good one. A lot of good stuff happened. A lot of really good strategy to talk about. This was a fun episode. I really like this one. You know, who doesn't love the swap, right? You know, no, I certainly didn't see a swap coming at 16. I mean, I guess last week I saw it because it was previewed. But you know, I like the idea of flipping to three tribes and giving that Angkor tribe a little extra boost with an extra player. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, I think we all thought the swap was coming, but I think that we were blindsided just by the fact that it was going to be a swap to three tribes. So an interesting wrinkle here to go to three tribes at 16 in this game. The only thing that I got spoiled on this was on Survivor Reddit that they were posting about that the company that makes the buffs started to advertise that there was a third buff that was coming out.
Isn't the company called Buff?
Yeah. Yeah. So if they could just get on the same page as the company that makes the buffs, this would have been a total blindside for us.
This is what happens with Apple products. It's like someone who makes like some like peripheral will spoil there's a new MacBook computer case coming out. I guess that means there's a new MacBook coming out.
Yep. That's how it went down in Silicon Valley and then also in millennial and Gen X land. So we're going to talk about everything going on.
Millenniums in Gen X.
Yes. Yes.
According to CeCe.
Yes. So we're going to talk through everything here on the special morning edition. Last night was the debate. So we didn't want to go head to head with.
You had a funny tweet. You had a funny tweet about it.
Yeah, I said, if you're used to watching two blowhards talk over each other after Survivor, you're still in luck this week. It just won't be me and Steven.
It's still fun.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Oh, Steven, you're so complimentary.
Yeah, I mean, it's the morning. You know, normally we do this like at bedtime.
I didn't know that you were a morning person.
I become a morning person as I gotten older. You know, like I was, you know, I feel like, you know, in your 20s, no, like someone. Now that I'm an old man, it's like I want to get up and seize the day.
Wow, look at you. All right. Yeah. So what a Gen Xer. Anyway, yeah. So we're going to take
hardworking Gen Xer, like that classic Gen X stereotype. Hardworking.
Yes, classic hardworking Gen Xer, Stephen Fishback. So we're going to take your questions, hashtag REJP. And then we have a very busy day of podcasting still to come right after this. I'm going to go right into my exit interview with CeCe coming up here in just a little bit. Then also I'm going to be speaking with Steven's island spouse, Kimmy Kappenberg.
Oh, hey, that'll be fun. That's a good one.
Yes, we have to get her take on what she thought of Ty's chickens over these last years. We haven't heard from her.
Oh, yeah. That. You get a lot of chicken talk.
Yeah. Why didn't Sia give her any money?
Yeah. Yeah. She was too early. It's like they say, you know, being too early is the same. Again, another Silicon Valley aphorism. Being too early is the same thing as being wrong.
Yeah. Why didn't Bjork come out and give Kimmy Kappenberg any money in 2001?
Is that who it was? Wasn't it like NSYNC?
Well, I don't know if NSYNC were real animal activists at that point.
That's so rude. How dare you?
Yeah, I have no idea. I don't know. Yeah. So that's what's coming up. And then voicemails with Ali Lasher. Get your voicemails in. Send them into robiswebsite.com/voicemail. And email questions for Kimmy. You got about 90 minutes to go before I get into talking to Kimmy. So survivor at robswebsite.com. Yes.
Rob, we're burying the lead here. It's your birthday. Hey-o. Happy birthday.
Yes. Hey. Yes. And Steven,
how old are you?
I have to check my long form birth certificate and get back to you on that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's switched over to like another digit. Is that it?
You're yes. Like, well, good news for you, Stephen Fishback. On famousbirthdays.com, you've moved up one peg in the famous 37-year-olds page. Put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
It's outrageous that you're above me. That's outrageous. How many votes did you get for second chance? Zero votes.
That's true.
No votes, Rob.
That's true. They said immediately upon my appearing on Survivor, they said that he immediately needs a second chance. They didn't mull it over for 6 years.
Yes, it was a different decision making process back then. It was simpler times.
Yes. All right. So let's get into talking about this episode. And this was my favorite episode of the season because now we're really into the thick of it with all of the strategy and all of these different tribes. And so let's just start off with David again. And first off, he was the person who was in an interesting spot there. He had the opportunity once again to play an idol to save an ally. Last week, he chose to do it. This week, he chose not to do it.
Yeah.
Steven, does he have to be all in or all out with his philosophy of the David doctrine of I will use my hidden immunity idol to save my allies because I'm the only one who knows how to find the hidden immunity idol very easily?
It is nice being the only person to know what to look for in terms of the hidden immunity idol. Like that's a huge advantage. At first when I first saw that, I was like, oh my gosh, like David plays his idol for someone who's not even his ally right before a swap, terrible play. And then after the swap, which is a much stronger play, right? Cause like, you'll probably swap again, but you've a higher chance of making the merge. He doesn't play his idol to save the one person who is consistently on his side. CC, she's voted with him every single time and, only person to vote with him last time. This episode, as soon as Michelle comes and kind of puts poison in her ear, she immediately goes back to David. Nevertheless, I still thought this was the right move, not playing the idol. I think, playing it last week, I think we chastised it. It was a real hot point. A lot of people debating back and forth on Twitter. Some people were saying it was a good move. They were wrong. Some people were saying a bad move, like us. We were right. I don't think you have to be consistent here. I think it was right for him to try to build faith with this new alliance. What do you think?
Well, I think that David is in a bad spot because I do think that he's going to be the person who is voted out the next tribal council if they go to another one. But the thing in his favor is that he gets to keep the idol in his pocket. So
yes. If
he goes to another tribal council, he can play his idol rather than spend it on CC here, because then potentially he's just headed into a 2-2 tie at the next tribal council and he could be voted out the next time they go to tribal.
Right. Like best case scenario for David is that he's really pissed off Zeke and Chris. He plays the idol. He saves CC. They would go to rocks at four or whatever, fire making at four. That would be pretty cool to see a fire making challenge before the merge if they did do that. But is Chris really gonna? Maybe there's something to be said for playing the idol to save CC here. Is Chris really gonna go to rocks for Zeke? Like, maybe he'll go to rocks against David. It's like they say that 33% of Clinton voters are really anti-Trump voters. It's like maybe Chris would be like an anti-David voter more than like a pro-Zeke voter.
Well, he did say if David screwed him over that he was going to choke him. He did walk that back a little bit, but you don't know what he might have done.
I'm just kidding. Awkward laugh. Yeah.
Yeah. So I do think that it was for David that he's not in a great spot here post swap. And I think that Chris was somebody who really lucked out by the fact that they merged or they swapped into tribes of three different tribes, Stephen, because I think that, something I was talking about with Josh during the week was if they went to tribes of just like a split into two tribes, that somebody like Chris, I think, would be more of a target. But here he's carrying this tribe.
Right. You mean with two, there's more people who you can kind of rely on to be a challenge champion. I mean, it's obviously there's equal men and equal women here, right? For the most part, pretty balanced tribes. You know, the other two tribes are fairly balanced against each other. This, although I guess that one tribe has both, Ken and Jay are on opposite tribes. This tribe has definitely got the two weakest players. You know, in terms of like strength, they seem like decently compared to the other tribes. Like they've got as strong a top, but their bottom is so much weaker that really getting rid of CC or David would seem to really just, you know, up their average strength quite a bit.
Yeah, David was so bad in the challenge that Zeke was asking audibly, is he trying to throw the challenge for us? Is that why you guys screwing us over?
Was it Zeke who said that?
I thought Zeke said it, yeah.
Oh, is it Zeke? Okay. Yeah, I couldn't tell. I just read the subtitle. Yeah, that was funny. I mean, you know, if you're honestly, there's like something to be said right before a swap of the idea of like agreeing with your tribe, like, hey, whichever tribe of ours has numbers, throw the challenge to get rid of the other guys. Like, you know, and I feel like that plan is made a lot. Like we certainly, you know, made that plan 100 times on Bion. It never happens because then when you get to the swap, you know, the theoretical idea is like, well, A, like, you know, Survivor casts a bunch of like meatheads who don't even understand the idea of throwing a challenge. And B, once you get to the swap, you're supposed to theoretically, you know, act as though this is your new group. And so, you know, to a certain degree, it makes sense for this group to create the strongest group, and getting rid of CC does that, like even apart from its strategic benefits to Chris.
Steven, did you guys talk that through in Cambodia of if we go from two tribes to three tribes, then knock out all of the Takeo people that would be in your tribe of six?
Yeah, of course we talked about it.
Okay. I'm sure they were talking about, yeah. It hadn't happened before, Steven. I don't know how you knew that they were going to go to three tribes.
Oh, I don't know if we knew they were going to go to three. I guess Joe had suspected, like Joe had all these like grand theories about how things, Joe suspected they might go to three tribes, and he actually correctly guessed when they would go to three tribes. So we talked, you know, you run through every possible hypothesis, you know, you got nothing but time out there. You run through everything. You know, I'm sure they had the conversation, like, let's throw it, whoever's got the numbers. But then when you get out there, you know, it's hard to actually, you know, commit to that.
Let's talk it through from the perspective of Chris. Did you like his decision to immediately flip against Gen Xers?
I did. I thought that was a good for a couple of reasons. I, you know, Chris is getting the fishy this week. I thought that was smart. First of all, he has no trust with David and CC, right? Like, he and CC have voted against each other at every single tribal council, and he and David have voted against each other at two tribal councils. David, obviously, you know, shocking him at least two of those. You know, he and Zeke just are connecting, you know, and there's something to, you know, it's like that idea of jivingness that we've talked about. You know, when you connect with someone, like, that's as important as like, hey, I hated you on my tribe for the last 2 weeks. You know, I guess we're stuck together. It's like, no, he and Zeke have like a natural bond that's like seems to be like legitimate. And I think you have to put a lot of faith in those bonds. And the other thing is, you know, as Chris said, like, he needs a big alliance come the merge. You know, he is a huge dude, and Chris knows that at the merge, he's going to be a big target. What did you think? Or do you also agree that good move for Chris?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, just going back to last week's vote about how we thought it was a bad move for David, I think this is more fallout from that, where he ends up in a situation where him and CC, that you made this big move to save Jessica. Great. Congratulations. You've saved Jessica.
Right.
Well, one, now you ended up in a tribe swap situation where one of the people you really burned is with you. Maybe he sticks with David and CC if they did not do that. And two, and we can explore this later, Jess is like, oh my God, Ken, I'm going to give you the legacy advantage. So thank you so much for what?
Unbelievable. Ken, you saved me. What? No, he didn't. He voted against you.
So what did David get from this? He spent so much capital in the game to buy what? To buy loyalty from Jessica, who's not even around anymore.
Not on his tribe, not giving him the legacy advantage. I mean, yeah.
I like the move for Chris because he had to do something. There is no Gen X tribe anymore. That there was basically like him and Brett were a two. Maybe there was a three.
Sunday maybe with them.
Yeah, that there was no big group of Gen Xers that he needed to stay loyal to. But what about Michelle? And we've talked about, we gave her a lot of accolades on the Mari vote. But I think that potentially we're seeing that this could be a hot take, Steven. I think she is a flawed Survivor player.
Well, I mean, everybody is. Why do you say that?
I don't think that she has a lot of subtlety to her game. I think that where we were impressed in the vote where she got Hannah to flip at Tribal Council, even though that was the seventh vote, and we would say, okay, well, maybe she was worried about that. Just the fact that she was like calling out David at Tribal Council about how, you know, I would vote for David. It was just so blunt. Steven, this week you were asked to do a podcast about if you were going to put together the traits of all different Survivor players into one person. And you tweeted out a picture of Kim Spradlin.
Yeah.
That Kim is so charming. And I think that's such a big part of the social game. And for Michelle, while I think that she demonstrates a lot of intelligence about playing the game, I do think that she is lacking in the charmingness of the, you know, winning people over and putting people at ease.
I think that's right. And I do think that sort of is what the strongest players do, is it's just that they're charming. You want to work with them. And we haven't really seen that from Michelle. And I actually think that's a testament to how she's not even, she's like the fourth in the tri-fourth, you know, she's the tri-fourth. where like, you know, these three people have this really tight bond, and she's like also in that group because she kind of looks like them. I think that really is a testament. You know, I think that's kind of the same point, right? It's like she's not that sort of like charming, beguiling person who often is the person who wins Survivor. You know, if you look at, there is that sort of like charm. I think that's a really, really good observation. I mean, that CeCe conversation, like, I was so on the fence about it. Because on the one hand, I'm like, oh my God, Michelle, like, you're really, you know, you, these people have just come to said you're safe and now you're going to do this. Like, this could very well blow up in your face. On the other hand, like, you know, if you're Michelle, do you trust, you know, it's you, if it's not CeCe, do you trust them that much to not even like make the effort? Do you think she should have even approached CeCe at all? I know you think that this was not the best way to do it, but do you think she should have done anything?
No, I thought that this was fine, that I didn't think it was that bad. I thought she should go and feel that out. I was more, I'm trying to think of the right word. I just did not like how she handled Tribal Council. Like, I feel like that there's a way to say, like, you know, who do you think should be voted out? Yeah. She could say sort of like, you know, David, God love him, he's a good guy, but I don't know, you know. Yeah. There's a way to sort of like soften that blow. And it was just very blunt, especially when you're not voting for David. I mean, she's voting for CeCe at that tribal council. So I don't know if there's a play that she's trying to do to sort of like scramble the frequencies of trying to, I mean, get him to maybe waste his idol on himself or something like that. I just thought that was, there was no soft touch there.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. The tribal council remark was even worse in terms of just like how, you know, and when she approached CeCe, to be honest, you know, she really went in with an aggressive pitch. It wasn't like, hey, you know, I really like you. Maybe, you know, what do you think if we did something together? That would be fun. You know, it was really like, here are my list of reasons why David should be the target, and we got to go after him. And he's, you know, I'll be with you. And it was like so aggressive. Yeah, no soft touch. I think that's a really good observation.
Thank you, Steven.
Yeah.
So complimentary.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm, you know, hey. You know.
And also, it was a real dog and pony show for her. And I think that this is more of a veteran Survivor thing. When if like a bunch of people are coming to you like, hey, good news, we're saving you, right, you'll be fine. Like, I feel like when you're being lied to on Survivor, I don't feel like people go through that much effort to convince you that you're going to be safe. Do you agree with that?
Maybe they don't come over in that like celebratory way. I think, you know, you're always, you do go to people who are being voted out and you're like, oh no, you're fine. But you're right. It's not that sort of like casual, you know, it's like, there is that kind of, that would be hard for someone to know though. I mean, that would be a really hard read.
Like, I can't imagine or remember a scenario where people were like, hey, great news. We just say, you know, we got the best news for you. It's your lucky day.
Yeah.
You're safe. We were thinking about it, but now we're not going to vote you off. So I thought that they really sold it in a convincing way to her, that I don't know if she needed to go to CeCe, but I can't come down on the initiative. I just think that it was, the approach was a little too hard.
Yeah, that's a really good assessment. I really agree with that. The other thing I want to say about Chris's move, which actually Josh Wiggler, I was talking with him about it yesterday. And he said another good element to it is that it also kind of undermines David's power position, where by he's eliminating David's best ally. And so not only is it like, you know, looping David in, as, you know, Chris is obviously doing, but he's also kind of weakening David's position in the game. So, you know, another strength of that. And I was thinking, too, like, you know, I don't remember if Josh or I said this, but by getting David to vote out his best ally, you know, one of the things I think we talked about, you know, that might've legitimized David's idol play was it really showed he's a good ally, right? Like he's going to go to bat for his alliance. And that's sort of what Jeremy's rub off effect was in playing his idol for me, right? Like this is a guy who's going to be there for his allies. This week, David votes out his best ally. So like, you know, maybe, you know, it kind of like undoes that. It mitigates that.
Yeah. Changes his table image a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think it was really good. That said, I also thought David played this really well. You know, I thought he did a really good job of coming around to Chris. I thought in terms of like everything he said at Tribal Council, in terms of all of his like, you know, I really screwed up and I need to heal this relationship and this is my fault. You know, he took a lot of ownership of that onto himself. I think he said all the right things. I think David did an amazing job this week.
Yeah, I still don't think he made the right move last week, but hard to have a lot of qualms with what he did in this episode. And we know one thing, that unless he gets blindsided with an idol in his pocket, he's not going home at the next tribal council. So he's got 3 more days at the very least.
Yeah, yeah. And, I love this Zeke-Chris alliance.
Yeah, no, that's very fun. I saw you tweeting that, hasn't this been done before, the country guy and the kid from New York?
Well, that was a quote of Chris's, like, I'm a country boy and he's a New York kid. So, again, like, not my accents aren't the best. I just thought I should make it about me.
Okay, that's fair. You're not even a millennial.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Steven, let's touch in on some of these other tribes. And so do you have a preference? You want to go to green or purple? Don't ask me to give you the names, right?
I don't even remember the colors. There's the Ken and Adam tribe.
Yeah, that, okay. I'm loving the Adam, Figgy, and Taylor tribe with Ken and Jessica.
Yeah, that's a fun one.
Adam, you know what to do.
Yeah,
you know what to do, Adam.
Yeah.
Don't let us down. Let us down, Adam.
Ken really lucked out on that tribe swap, like with Jessica, who's his best ally somehow now, Adam, who's, you know, totally simpatico with Ken. And then you have these two giant targets on the millennials.
Yeah. Boy, Taylor is saying like, what does it care? What do we care? Let's just make out in front of everybody.
I guess like though, everyone's going to know anyway, you know, you're not going to be able to hide it.
Yeah. Steven, I want to do, this is my impression. I don't know if this is going to play on the podcast. Steven, this is my impression of Taylor every moment of the day.
He's always, always big, laughing. Open mouth, like wolfish face. Yeah, yeah.
What's so funny?
Yeah. Life is a game to Taylor.
I guess so. Boy,
this is a joke.
Adam, you know what to do. All right.
Wait, what should Adam do?
You're a super duper fan. You know the play here.
Is to vote out Taylor or Michelle. I mean, or a Figgy.
Yeah, gotta break up Failure.
Yeah, gotta break up Failure. Which one though would you vote for?
It's interesting. I get the sense that they're gonna take the shot at Taylor over Figgy.
I thought so too.
And it's a little bit of edit reading on my part, but I thought you're getting the Figgy is the one. Okay, I can't get into loser edit. Is that also verboten?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I only know by what I'm being blasted for in the comments.
Yeah, so that Figgy is the one saying like, hey Taylor, like this is not a good idea. He's like, who cares? We're the power couple.
Yeah,
like so what? Let's just make out. You're hot.
Yeah. You know what's interesting though? Speaking of loser edits, you know, usually there's like a visibility spike when people are about to give vote, like the episode before someone's about to get voted out. That hasn't happened for Cece or Lucy. I think both Cece and Lucy were almost invisible in the episode before they were voted out. If you're into that kind of thing, you know,
Cece didn't even get a lot of airtime in this week's episode.
In this episode, yeah, she was barely in this one.
Yeah, so I don't know that she, I did not really see it coming. I thought that this was going to be up until the point we went to tribal council. Like I thought we were going to see Michelle go home in this episode. This is like the edit.
This is like the Keith Tollefson edit, you know, not even a confessional in your own, the classic Keith Tollefson edit, not even like barely. I think Keith like maybe got one or zero confessionals in his boot episode.
Okay. Well, that we have to go back and check the tape. Friend of the podcast, Keith Tollefson.
Yeah.
All right.
Is he a friend of the
podcast? Oh, very good. For close confidant of the podcast. Oh, the inner circle, Stephen.
Why have I not been
included? I'm sorry.
I'm
cheating on you, Stephen.
I know that. First this Big Brother thing you're doing next week, and now Keith.
Look. When in Rome, Stephen. All right. Yeah. So then let's talk about the other tribe. And the other tribe we didn't really get to see a ton of in this episode. We only really saw it from Jay's perspective and the Michaela incident.
Michaela incident? That sounds like a spy novel.
It makes it sound negative.
I didn't think negative. I just thought it sounded so mysterious.
Yeah. So first we got to see Jay talk about how these Gen Xers, they don't even know what they're doing. Did you feel like that? Were we supposed to be sympathetic to Jay in that spot, or was Jay coming off bad to you?
That's what I was wondering. Like, I kind of thought, like, here you've got Jay who's like bossing around these adults, you know, and they're just sort of like trying to not screw it up, you know, like they've got they're suddenly in the minority on this tribe. And you know what it is, you know, being a minority on a millennials versus Gen X is dangerous. So, so they're just trying not to screw it up. Then Jay's like berating them, you know, it's totally like, you know, we saw Brett being a major shelter builder, in the first episodes of this season. You know, now when you've got some like kids screaming at you about like, oh, where to chop? Oh, you don't know exactly where I'm thinking you should be chopping, you know? That's the millennial attitude. They don't know how to communicate with their coworkers because they're all do it themselves, build apps or whatever.
Is that it? There was a line that Brett said, and I couldn't tell from the edit if it was in confessional or if he was saying it to Jay, but he's had a line like, boy, this kid knows everything. And I couldn't tell if he was being facetious or if he was being sincere.
I thought that was in scene, right? Wasn't that like, I think he was being kind of like, sincere facetious, you know, that's sort of like, all right, you go. I mean, like, you know, in that situation, like it behooves him to just go along with what Jay says. And like, you know, Jay's sort of like that like classic, like angry, you know, rich person who's mad that like the help isn't immediately understanding his, you know, his needs.
The angry rich person. Well, isn't that a classic? Like a lot of Downton Abbey going on.
Yeah. Like, yeah. You know, like, oh, how dare you? Whatever.
How dare you?
Whatever.
Yeah, we didn't really get to see a lot from Brett and Sunday's perspective in terms of what they thought of. I got the sense that they were sort of like, hey, let's just go with the flow and let's not upset the apple cart here where there's only two of us. But a lot from Michaela, Stephen.
Michaela, what a great moment that was.
I mean, Michaela is really a phenomenal job for Survivor casting, finding Michaela.
Yeah, Michaela's great. I mean, totally, you know, a beast in the challenges, you know, and then, you know, this really honest, emotional, incredible moment at camp where she's, you know, so down and then, you know, she forces herself to make fire and just like, you know, overwhelmed with the emotion of it all. I mean, you know, Survivor of the Game is all about strategy, but I feel like, you know, really Survivor of the Experience and even Survivor of the Show are just about these kind of like emotional transformational moments. I thought it was great.
She was great and such a great find that she is an amazing character. She's fantastic in the challenges, very attractive. They really just nailed this one. Maybe yeah. Even the best piece of casting they have on this entire season.
Yeah. I mean, this is a really fun cast.
I like this cast.
Yeah. Michaela may be the best. I don't know. I mean, who else do we love? I mean, there's so many that we love. How do you choose? How do you choose among all the great? I mean, David's amazing. Zeke is amazing.
But she's given us the best sound bites this season. Yeah, Michaela's such a dynamo in the challenges and really has given, you know, a couple of really strong moments.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she's fantastic. Love the Michaela. All right. Stephen, anything else from this episode before we start to dive into some of these questions?
I want to call out, I wrote about it in my blog, which is available now on people.com or my Twitter, which is not up yet on my Twitter. I haven't tweeted it yet, but I really thought Chris did an amazing job with the way that he approaches both Zeke and David. in both examples, he really goes up to these people and he's not like, you know, he's in a power position here, but he really goes up and is like, we, you know, with David, you know, with David, he could easily say like, hey, we're blindsiding Cece. Do you want in or out? But he, instead he's like, we need to really think this through and kind of plan our course together and decide together what we're going to do. Like, he really makes it about we instead of about me. And I think we talk a lot about how that's, you know, really the sign of a good survivor player is that ability to kind of build those bonds just conversationally, saying like, we are in this together. Does the exact same thing with Zeke, you know, like, hey, A, he says like, you're safe, which is what everybody wants to hear. And then B, he says, and let's plan something together. You know, it's not like you can go come with my plan. You know, I'm going to tell you what to do. And it may sound kind of obvious, but it's such a, you know, you see it all the time with people being like, here's what we're doing and you can come with it, you know, and it really is the people who say, you know, what are we going to do? Let's make this plan together, that are the ones who end up excelling in the game. And I thought Chris did such a fantastic job of that.
Yeah, I think that Chris is a really strong player. I was nervous about his position. Really, Wiggler really started to put the fear of God into me that Chris was going to go home this week. But
you
now
can't listen, you can't listen to Wiggler.
Yeah. Well, I do think that there's something, Stephen, that to be said about this format where we go from two to three.
And probably
where
back now, to two.
What's that?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Where we go from two tribes to three tribes, that the people that this, like the strong alpha male players, like the merge boots, I think people start to get a little bit anxious and vote off these merge boots as we start to get closer to the merge.
Right.
But you, it's hard to lose those players when you go down to three tribes.
Yeah. Yeah. You really are reliant on them and there's nowhere to hide in a three. I mean, if you've got a five people in your tribe, it's not like you can think like, oh, I'll vote someone out. And like, I've still got, you know, room to spare there. You know, you're really, you really are dependent on some of those people. On the other hand, you could intentional Mott Singh, you know, post swap intentional Mott Singh. So
okay,
never seen it done before. Yeah,
we have to see how that plays out. All right, Stephen, my other question for you is: at the brand new Ikabula tribe, is there a hidden immunity idol in your estimation?
Yeah,
there is.
Yeah, I would say so. There was one on Angkor; it was never found, but there was one. Yeah, there's definitely a hidden immunity idol on that tribe.
Okay, so Sunday, Brett, Michaela, Hannah, Will, Jay. I'm trying to think. None of them have the idol. None of them know what they're looking for.
Yeah.
I'm getting the feeling maybe nobody at Ikabula will find this idol.
I think that's probably right. Yeah. I mean, I think it's likely. They'll swap again, right? There's going to be another swap before the merge, I think.
There'll be a merge, Stephen.
A merge and then a merge.
Yeah, there'll be a first merge. Yeah, at first some merge. Point, right, we'll go down to two tribes, yeah. Right? Probably yeah. Not next week when we're together
the week
for
after.
The live
probably
show.
Two to three votes. Yeah.
They only did one in Cambodia. Do you think they'll do more than one in a tribe of two, or do you think that they'll potentially merge from the three tribes?
Wait, no, we had more than one vote at three. We had like two. We had
No, at two, that when you guys went down to two tribes for just
one
vote.
We expected two votes. Yeah, it was just one vote. Poor Woo. I hope they do two. I think I like the extra moment of like, you know, how long are we going to be doing this for? I like the kind of having to see these tribes kind of assess like, how much do I need to commit to this group versus how much am I just like, you know, stopping through here on my way to the merge?
I do think it could potentially be interesting if a Survivor season decided to merge from three tribes into
one. I think
that'd
be fun. Yeah, I think that'd be fun too.
I think that'd make for a very crazy merge bump in a season.
I think that would be really fun because, okay. But the 3-2 though. The more you mix, like the more you know, ultimately the more like cross loyalties people are going to have, and I think that's you know ultimately the goal here.
Okay, let's keep going. Let's get into these questions, Stephen. Why don't we start off, Alex Kidwell behind the scenes, pulling these questions. Josh Spalding, hey, Robin, Stephen, if David had played the idol for Cece, would it have been a dumber move than last week's play?
I think it would have been a better move than last week's play. I thought, last week, you know, we for reasons we discussed and, you know, we don't need to keep harping on this, it was kind of a waste. I thought that, you know, I thought it would have been a stronger move in this position for David. Do you agree with that?
I think that in both instances, he should not have played the idol.
Yeah,
I think that it would have been potentially a better move this week than to have done it last week. But last week was so bad. It was such a disaster, Stephen.
Yeah, yeah.
It was not good.
Well, and he really got lucky because he really could have gone home next with that play.
And look, it turns out to be No harm, no foul.
Probably not,
he finds
though,
another
probably
idol.
Not. Yeah.
He finds the idol almost immediately thereafter, Shades of Russell. He is able to mend the fence with Chris and has potentially a tighter ally, but in the back of Chris's head is still, boy, you burned me twice. You wrote my name down two times.
Yeah. And I think not it makes literally. Him like a bigger, like someone like David ideally wants to be able to like sneak into the merge and then like not be a huge target. Everyone is going to think he's a huge target now as soon as he gets to the merge, because everyone's going to hear like this guy played an idol for someone else. He had this big flamboyant move that everyone's going to be talking about. And it's going to be like, you know what, you know, he's so A, he's got a resume that we all know about. So that's threatening. And then B, who knows what he's going to do next.
But I feel like that you've argued the opposite of that when you talk about how Jeremy played the idol for you and what a good move that was because everybody just likes you so much that people thought that that was a positive for Jeremy that he kept you around.
No, I think, I mean, it's a really different spot for Jeremy, right? Who's a huge target no matter what. I'm saying like someone like David needs to be, you know, is in a better spot at the merge if he can kind of slip in undetected. Someone like Jeremy, you know, the alpha male, you know, giant ripped dude firefighter, like he's a huge target. Like, and that's, you know, and we're talking like halfway through the merge versus the beginning of the merge. This is so, yeah, it's a lot, really different.
Okay. Just got to keep you honest, Steven.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. You know, yeah, totally different. I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, you, the same thing happening in totally different times and completely different situations is totally different. You know, there's no like ever like one exact right way. Everything, you know, I learned this from watching the behind the scenes extras on the All-Stars DVD, Rob, where you yourself said that, you know, being, you gotta being flexible and being, you know, is the most important. So I learned it from you and I'm just, you know, trying to remind you of the things you said. You know, you got to adapt. Being able
Thank
to
you.
Adapt.
Yeah. Thank you, Steven. All right. Why don't we check in with Adam?
Adam Rita wants to know, Rita?
Let's go with Rita.
Adam Rita. Okay. Should any of the millennials on Ikebula be throwing the next challenge to ensure Sunday or Brett goes home next? ?
That's interesting to throw the challenge. I mean, you think Michaela is going to be up for throwing a challenge?
Or Jay? You know, I really think that this was, you know, that's sort of what we were saying. Like, yes, theoretically, you absolutely should be doing that. There's no way they're going to do it.
No, I don't think so. I mean, we see that it was CC that went home at that spot. I feel like that people feel like, okay, the plan is vote out Gen X, but better you guys than me. We would rather keep our tribe strong. And I mean, is there an incentive, Steven, to instead of having reward challenges, to attach rewards to these challenges where then there's less of an incentive to throw them?
Oh, that's smart. Yeah, I just think throwing is such a niche use. We don't see it enough that they need to like correct for it. You know, it's very, very rare. And, you know, like it's just maybe because like Survivor cast people who, you know, are always going to be aggressive players, maybe because, you know, it's dangerous to throw. You know, it really is. There's, you know, you never want to be the one going to tribal council, you know, unless sometimes it does make sense. So unless you do. You know, the other element is like, you know, as Tyson said to me before I went to Cambodia, you've got to commit to your new tribe because you have no idea what's happening on the other tribes. So I think you've got to treat the new tribe like it's your core, and you can't, you know, you kind of hope that the other tribe, that your allies stay tight, but you have no idea.
Okay. Let's go to Derek, who says, is it inevitable that David needs to use his idol next tribal council? And is it better to idol out Zeke or Michelle?
That's a good question.
Is it inevitable, Steven? And could potentially, I'm trying to think of what you could do there in that spot. So
I think, I don't think it's impossible. I mean, I don't think Chris has any loyalty to Michelle, you know, and Zeke doesn't have any loyalty to Michelle. I think if you're David, you can maybe convince Chris and Zeke to target Michelle.
You know, four is a weird spot to have an idol in the mix because it's rare that we end up seeing a tribal council of four where you could play an idol. Usually at the final four, the idol is already you know, the past last time that you can use it. So you wouldn't really be able to split the votes where if it's Zeke and Michelle and Chris are together, it's not like, okay, you know, let's put, you know, two votes on her. Like, I guess you could say like, okay, all right, three of us are voting together as a Zeke. Why don't you put one vote on Michelle just in case?
Yeah, right. What do you think about...
But then you have to explain that to Michelle if David gets voted out of like, okay, well, we put a one vote on you. Just
yeah,
just
that never goes over really well. That's only going to create some animosity. But
unless know, it's you tell Christina Cha, she doesn't mind.
It's true. Christina's great. She's so thick skinned about that stuff.
Yeah, she doesn't care.
And we like crapped all over Christina for that entire season, and she was still like, oh, whatever, it's a game. You know,
she doesn't care. She's fine.
Yeah. She's great. The
one of the reasons you love One World so much.
Yeah, exactly. Such a great season. what is a good question though. Was Zeke or Michelle, if you're David and you did have that choice, who should you target?
It's interesting, but I would say I would target Michelle, considering that she's like publicly boasting at tribal council. I think David should get voted out. Yeah. So even though that it looks like you have a tighter bond between Zeke and Chris, at least they're not like publicly campaigning for David to go home like Michelle is.
Yeah, I think so too. I also think Zeke will be a bigger threat at Emerge and therefore someone who's better to keep around. He's like performed pretty solidly in the challenges. Michelle kind of botched this last challenge.
One other observation I had, Stephen, watching the episode this morning again, I noticed that Zeke and Michelle were holding hands at Tribal Council.
I thought that was really cute.
Yeah, do you read anything into that? I mean, this is two people that were, you know, came into this swap talking about how like, oh, this is not really a good spot for me. Michelle is not one of my allies. Zeke felt like he was going to be the next one to go home. Do you feel like that is this, who do we give credit to? Or is this just like, oh, but they were nervous?
I think, yeah, they're nervous. They obviously, you know, you're even if you're not necessarily allied with someone, you still become close to them just from living together. Yeah. Survivor for 2 weeks.
Then, well, let me at least give credit to both Zeke and Michelle for people that were not necessarily allies coming into this. And you could have seen a scenario where they were both throwing each other under the bus. And I thought that's what quickly where it was going to go to. And maybe it would have had Chris not come to Zeke. But I thought you were definitely going to get a scenario where sort of like with Anna and who was she? Oh, Ty. She was trying to throw him under the bus going back right in this spot last season. That didn't happen with Zeke and Michelle.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're right. They were united and like good for them, but you're right. Like it's a totally different scenario. You know, one of them trying to throw the other under the bus versus once they know that Chris has them safe, that they've got like some outs there. What did you think of, is that a millennial thing to not throw people under the bus?
No, I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. Brendan Fitzpatrick wants to know, where do Adam, Ken, and Zeke Chris bromances rank on the list of Survivor funny buddy cop or odd pair teams?
Okay, Adam and Ken.
That's not that weird. Adam and Ken.
That's not that weird.
Yeah,
Zeke and Chris bromances on the top of buddy cop or odd pair team. Yeah, I mean the Zeke and Chris is an odd pairing. It's, I mean, what a coincidence that you know that Zeke happens to be a fan of Oklahoma Sooner football. Yeah. And Chris happens to be an Oklahoma Sooner football player.
Is it football?
Yeah, I believe so.
I have no
idea. It
looked
like it was basketball from last night.
I don't know. I have no idea what sports these things are.
Yeah.
I guess it is football.
I mean, what are the chances of that?
Yeah, it seems pretty slim, you know, but there it is.
Yeah. So who knew? So I'm sure that would be a good off-season podcast of Survivor's most unlikely pairings. We will see if JT and Steven made it into the top 20 on that podcast.
How dare you? How dare you?
I thought that's your whole thing of where the what an unlikely pair.
Yeah, but what made it into the top 20? You know, how about if we were universally acclaimed to the number one?
I don't think it's that unlikely.
What? The Alabama country boy and the New York City kid? So unlikely. Well, now that everyone else is trying to jump on the bandwagon.
Are you biased against people from
very different lifestyles and worldviews? You know, you just don't get it, Rob. This is why we'll never be a pair. We'll never be a pair, likely or unlikely.
Christian wants to know, was it wise for Jessica to say to Ken that the advantage could be passed after elimination? Also, happy birthday, Rob. Yeah, I thought that was such an odd exchange. The whole thing from Jessica saying, oh, Ken, just so you know that now I have to like earn your trust back. I have a thing that if I got voted out, I was going to give it to you. I mean, my Survivor brain would be like, oh, I totally screwed up by not having you get voted out because then I would have gotten that thing. I need to get you voted out next so I get that thing that you have.
I don't know. I mean, I think like an ally is always going to be worth more than like some magical thing. You know, the magical things are always like so situational, even like an idol, right? I'd rather have a strong ally than an idol for the most part.
But Ken was all about it. He was like, I'm so
impressed with Jessica that now with against going against these millennials, we've got this legacy and it'll be great.
And so, okay, fine.
Yeah, that was a really good Ken. That may be one of your best ones yet.
Working on it, Steven. So it's only week 5.
It's good though. I think it's really good.
Yeah. Well, it should be a fun season. Yeah. He was like, yeah, oh, this is great. Oh, now I have this ally that I have to work with. But it's like you are served by, you know, seeing that she goes out of the game.
Yeah, sort of. Again,
first get out Figgy and Taylor.
I think it's better to have the ally than like the mystery advantage, you know, vote whatever, do, you know, possibly some crappy challenge advantage, maybe some like vote thing, you know, like who knows, maybe like a cancel, maybe like a jury cancel, like who the hell knows, you know?
Yeah. All right. Let's do one more question with Steven. What do you got from Zach?
Zach Glossler wants to know, are Taylor and Figgy dead couple walking at this point? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just reading between the lines here. Yeah. They did really sell us that they like, oh, is the new couple going to get split up?
Yeah.
It's like, no, they're not. Really, really faked us out there, Survivor trailer.
Maybe next time.
Well, let's see. Adam, you know. Okay. All right. Sorry. Steven.
Oh, this is a good question from Sarah Freeman. One more. Is it worth targeting previous idol holders on the assumption they are more likely to find another?
Or more likely to have another.
Yeah.
I mean, that would, I think, give you pause, right?
Some people just got it, right? Like, there really is the preponderance of, you know, people having one idol, it makes them more likely to get the second idol. I mean, so many times, you know, right? My season, there were two people who, you know, there were four idols and only two people.
Steven, Spencer and Jeremy had this exact conversation in Cambodia where, you know, Spencer was talking about like, just because somebody had one idol doesn't mean that they're going to have another idol, talking to the person who had two idols. So sure. I do think there is a thing. I think that this is not just noise, that people that find one idol tend to find a second idol more often than a person finding their first idol. Once you lose your idol virginity, I think it's very easy to keep finding more idols.
Part of the reason for that is, you know, how they're hiding them that season. I mean, obviously that was most evident with David today, but one of the things going into the game that you have no idea about is how the idols are getting distributed. Are they coming in notes at reward challenges? You know, are clues coming in notes at reward challenges? Are they being buried under things? Are they being hidden in trees? You know, are they part of the scenery? Are they at challenges? Not having any idea means you have no way to narrow down your search. You're on an island or some like big wilderness preserve. There's no way for you to like even begin to process all the things. You know, I was like I almost like died like climbing in these like tide pools around these rocks at like high tide, trying to get into these like crevices, you know, going into these like murky swamps.
But you know, if you would have died there, then you would have gone out like, you know, like you wanted. he died looking for the idol.
He died like he lived. Yeah. But it's great. Like, not having any idea how it's being happening or like how they're being hidden is a huge disadvantage when you're looking for the new one. And so, you know, and then of course there's also the element of like the people who are looking and making the effort to look are the ones who are going to again make the effort to look. So I don't think it's that, but it's worth vote that person out. My God, screw him.
But Steven, that it doesn't this speak to the fact that if they are more likely to have other idols, then that you could potentially get idled out of the game.
That's why you got to blindside them. You know, you can't like give them the chance to play it correctly.
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, I think that people got burned by this in Samoa. I think that, you know, Russell, like, oh, he hasn't have his idol tonight because we just, you know, he just used it. And then he has his idol at the next vote.
Yeah.
Poor Kelly Sharbaugh.
Poor Kelly. What might have been? She could have been the winner.
She could have.
Some like all silent right, blonde girl.
Yes, she was typecast as the winner, but no, it was not the case. All right, so Stephen, fun show today, fun morning, know-it-alls. The next time, though, we will be live together in person.
Wow.
At Caroline's on Broadway this Wednesday night, October 26th. Can you believe it?
I can't believe it.
Yes.
It's crazy, we're playing Caroline's. I used to go to, like, see comedy shows at Caroline's.
Who'd
Little
you see?
Did I know how untalented those people must be.
Yes. Yeah, we'll be there. Sold out show. You don't know who else is going to show up. Should be. I'm not. Well, I don't mean to say Baylor and Missy are coming, but it's going to be a very fun night. No.
It is your birthday. Don't they like fly in for people's birthdays?
They would show up at my house today.
Oh wow, did they?
Not yet. But it's only 8:59 a.m.
Yeah.
So who knows? The day is young. All right, Stephen. So very fun show today. You want to use the hashtag #Triforth?
Triforth. I like it.
Triforth. A Stephen Fishback original.
Yeah.
You can read Stephen Fishback's blog by going to people.com. Eventually, he's going to tweet it out as well, at Stephen Fishback. Join us for our next podcast. Well, I'll have the exit interview coming up next, but then our recap with Kimmy Kappenberg. Email some questions in Survivor at robertswebsite.com. Or for the voicemails, Ali Lasher on the voicemail today, Stephen.
That's exciting.
Yeah, very fun. So we will be doing that later on tonight. Get your voicemails in robinsonwebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP. Thanks so much for joining us live here at this special time. And we will be back with more know-it-alls, not live next week, unless you are at Caroline's, but we'll have the video and audio for you guys posted as soon as we can next Wednesday night. Take care, everybody.
Bye. Oh, wait, are we live? Wait, one more thing.
Hold on.
This is
what else do you want to say?
I wanted to do so last week I told a story about this fan who I ran into on the street, and I wanted to apologize to him for being kind of abrupt. And this story has a happy ending because someone tweeted at me, you know, you're saying Tim Marksman. Do you mean Tim Marchman, who's editor of Deadspin?
And oh,
Rob, you and I have both done interviews with. He's interviewed both of us.
Yeah.
And, yes, that's who it was. It was Tim Marchman. So thanks to the power of the podcast, I was able to reach out to Tim Marchman over Twitter and apologize. So what,
I see.
What
happened? Wow. I had no idea. I actually listened to the Deadcast. I know that you don't like sports, but I do like the Deadspin podcast.
Yeah. Well, now, you know, he's a big fan, and, I'm a better person than you.
I guess so. I don't know necessarily how A plus B equals C equation, but
take some logical jumps.
Sure. All right. So good. Glad we got that in there. Yeah. And thanks so much to Alex Kidwell filling in for the intrepid Scott St. Pierre.
Thank you, Alex.
On the live show as we do it in the middle of the workday. So thanks for Alex for jumping in. Take care, everybody. Have a good one.
Bye. Survive the knowing.